Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, Season 18, Episode 4. We're nearly at home podcast, that's of course next week, but we're on Episode 4. So, seemed a really good place to drag Jack Bengian back into reality before he goes off into roundy-roundy glorious world that he is heading off to very, very shortly. Jack Bengian, hello.
Hello, how are we doing?
We're all right. We're all just kind of battening down the hatches and reaching for the woolly pulleys and getting used to the fact that we're now heading headlong out of autumn into a very much proper winter, and you're packing your shorts as we speak.
Yeah, I'm going to Rally Mexico.
Rally Mexico?
Yeah, this weekend.
You're going to be a bit early, mate.
Don't tell me I got the dates wrong.
Yeah, sorry, mate. You're approximately 6 months too early.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to my weekend. I don't know how hot it's going to be, but I'm off to the Formula One in Mexico. So good opportunity for me to do something different.
It's going
to
be warmer than where I'm in Knowsley right now,
isn't it? I can guarantee that.
Yeah. So listen, you obviously you've not been with us for a couple of weeks. So kind of post GB, we're now heading into it's weird because there was some rumors, of course, this Rally Spain wasn't even going to happen this weekend. Obviously, there's been a little bit of unrest over there, and I'm probably not doing that justice, but everybody seems to be it all seems to have leveled off now and the event's going to run, which obviously is the main thing.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of political unrest going on in Spain at the minute. But if you remember last year, we were in a similar situation where there was almost a coup going on pretty much last year, just before the event. And, they managed to make it go ahead. So they're good with sporting events, usually governments trying to make sure that they go ahead. They've usually got, they've got a big benefit to the economy and to keep things moving. So it'd be a big loss to the economy if the rally did get cancelled at the last minute. And it would also have, massive ramifications for its future. It'd have a serious long-term effect. So good to see that the event's going ahead, and I think we're set up for a pretty exciting weekend.
I'd say so. Obviously the goat's back, your hero.
Yeah, man. It's always
yeah, man. I feel like we should have fist bumped as you said that, Ben, to be honest with you. Yeah, man, he's back. Obviously seen of his triumphant return last year on board a Citroën. A lot's been made of the Citroën dominance. There's also been quite a lot made of the Citroën testing that's been going on over the last couple of weeks with regard to this new bodywork, new downforce, new bits and pieces. I've seen some quite funny, sarcastic social media posts with regards to copying Toyota's homework. Do you think the dominance will continue, Jack Bengian?
It's going to be interesting to see. I'm really intrigued by this whole Citroën Aero thing, and I'm really looking forward to it. I hope David Evans is going to have a fun weekend in Spain, finding out a lot more about what the situation is here, because we've gone from the start of 2017 where the aero has been fairly similar on all the cars. There's been very few aerodynamic tweaks. And then suddenly, in the space of 2 months, we've had Toyota's rear wing being questioned and an update given to the teams that they need to fit in new parameters with their rear wings. And then all of a sudden, Citroën crop up with the most radical front aerodynamic wings we've probably ever seen. The flicks above the wheel arches and stuff. If you're not seeing the pictures, you can go to autosport.com where we've run a few stories on this, and you can see the flicks are like a Formula One front ring with a flicks on the front. Sorry to keep talking about Formula One. So yeah, it's really interesting to see, and I'm really confused about the timing of all this, because if we've been stagnant since 2017 in terms of aero, why all of a sudden are we getting all this massive boost in aero? But obviously Citroën attempting to do everything they possibly can to give Sebastian Ogier the best chance to win the championship, but they're not going to be able to run that aero this weekend because they've run out of homologation tokens, and it was the same reason why they couldn't introduce the new suspension in Rally GB as well. So interesting times at Citroën, and they're obviously doing a lot of development, but it's a little bit confusing why they're testing new aerodynamic devices if they know they can't use them, or if they didn't know they couldn't use them. And that's a bit unusual as well, because they've only got so many homologation tokens.
Do you think there's an element of psychological warfare, as opposed towards the other teams, to show that Citroën are still fighting, and also showing, of course, their current drive is that, whatever happens, we're still developing, we're still working towards 2020. We know there's a new car coming in a couple of years' time, but that's not going to stop us trying to fight for this championship until that moment.
It's an interesting one, and if they were trying to keep it under wraps, the test, they did a fairly good job, but there was one photographer who was testing, and then he went to the tarmac and the gravel test as well, so there was pictures getting out. So I don't know, it's very difficult for teams to limit pictures getting out on social media these days. Even if you manage to block the roads off, someone might get in and just snap a little shot on the iPhone, and then you're viral then, aren't you? So it's a difficult one. But yeah, I can see what you're saying with the whole psychological thing, you know, to show that they're, you know, maybe this is something from Citroën's management to say to the drivers, you know, we're still interested in this car, we're still developing it, and you know, we're still trying to give Sebastian Ogier the best possible chance to win the championship. So it's really interesting to see what they're doing, and like I said, I'm hoping David Evans is going to come back with some very cool inside stories from Spain this weekend to tell us a little bit more about it.
We'll come back to Spain in a second. You know, the other big thing that's been happening, of course, they've had Mads testing out in Finland. He's been announced that they are going to run a third car on Rally Australia, trying to obviously insert cars in between other manufacturers and no doubt trying to help their driver. They still obviously feel that perhaps that it will come down to the last event with that. Or is that just a case of Mads wanting to rent a car and do Rally Australia? I don't know.
Well, let's be upfront and honest about this. So, Mads Osberg has been a very consistent WRC driver for a long time, but Citroën have made it very clear that they're a two-car team this year. So if they are running a third car, you would think that Mads would be paying for that seat. But that aside, I honestly think Citroën would have given him a drive, or at least a very, very heavily discounted drive, because they need that third car for Australia. We saw what happened in Australia last year when, you know, teammates are really important, and they're going to be important for the rest of the year. And Citroën basically fighting back, you know, with an arm behind their back for the whole season, really, haven't they? And there's been opportunities where Sebastian Ogier's inherited wins or has moved forward up the leaderboard thanks to people dropping out, and you know, another Citroën could have, you know, done the same thing and taken another position away from the likes of Orit Tanak or Thierry Neuville. So I do genuinely think Citroën have been hamstrung, and we talked about this a lot on the podcast about the fact that they're only running two cars. I don't think we need to go too much into it, but I definitely think it's affected their year, and I think that's you know, bringing Mads in is a recognition of that. I think odds Mads is probably wanting to get back into a WRC car after a pretty turbulent time in developing the R5 car. But even then, I think Citroën would have been very keen to get a third car out for that event.
Do you feel, you know, and you know, Mads kind of polarizes, you know, opinion of you know, bringing budget, not bringing budget, work driver, paying driver, whatever it may be, but. You look around, and we're going to talk about Jari Matti in a second, you know, which is everybody's kind of favourite subject. And there's one part I want to mention, and I almost don't want to discuss it, which I'll explain why in a second. But do you feel we're already past these generations, Jack? Do you feel, you know, we keep on talking about, you know, when we had Tiff on at the beginning of this season, you know, Tiff was talking about, you know, having Kalle Rovanperä and Oliver Solberg in cars for years to come at such a young age, you know, we need to allow these drivers through, because we've lost so many drivers, I think, you know, from early R5 days, where there hasn't been that progression. And is this stopping progression? Are we still, you know, we'll talk, as I say, about other drivers in a second, but, you know, are we limiting what we can do with our young drivers by allowing these things to happen?
It's a difficult one, really, but I think that would be slightly unfair to the likes of Mads Osberg. Personally, I'm definitely in the pro Mads camp. I think it is a fantastically consistent job, and I think given the opportunity that someone like Danny Sordo has to have a more consistent run in competitive machinery, I think he did a similar job. I think he's a point scorer and someone who's going to finish rallies. He's not the guy you employ to grab the car by the scruff of the neck and win rallies and win championships, because, you know, he's shown that he's not capable of that over the years. But for me, he's definitely a second or a third driver that you chuck in the car and scores really important manufacturer points. And I think the thing that the offset that you're always going to get between people like Rovanperä and Solberg is they're going to take a little while to get the experience and to learn. And we've seen, you know, it takes some drivers until the back end of their 20s, and the, you know, the, I think that's reflected in the fact that the the junior World Rally Championship is, you know, 26 years old is the peak. And, you know, I wouldn't call 26 years a junior because that's me. And I'm definitely not, I definitely don't feel junior these days, Tony.
You are to me, Jack. You are to me.
But, yeah, I think, I think there's always going to be that offset. And, I think in rallying, it's even bigger than anywhere else because sometimes the experience that the likes of Danny Sordo and Mads Oskarberg can bring is more important than the experience you get in other areas of motorsport because of all the experience of the events they've got and their ability to manage pace and make sure that they're, you know, they're not taking stupid risks and pushing where they know they can push and holding off where they know they need to. And I think that's something that people like Robin Perra and Solberg will learn eventually, but it, you know, it doesn't come overnight. And even with, you know, we've not seen Solberg in an R5 car so much this year, but I'll be interested to see how he gets on next year. Because if you look at Robin Perra in Germany, I go back to that one because for a start I was there, but also he was on another level. If anyone was watching the times and stuff, and you know, Jan Kopecky was coming off the, you know, his 87th. Czech rally then win in Barum and was just had no answer to Kalle Rovanperä's pace. And if you go back two seasons, Rovanperä was, you know, struggling to reach the top five in the Italian championship, making his, you know, his tarmac debut. And in the space of two seasons, he's become the fastest tarmac driver in that class. But then he chucked it off twice on two consecutive stages. And you need to learn when to push and when to hold off, and you need to learn to manage the pace. And that's the benefit that the likes of Danny Sordo and Mads Oskarberg, those and Jari Matti Latvala to a certain extent can give you. They can give you that experience that those younger drivers don't have.
Yeah, it's a story's come out over the last few days, Jack, and you know, everybody's had opinions as well about, you know, you just mentioned Kalle Rovanperä. He is going to be in a Toyota. You know, we keep on seeing the same stories regurgitated, you know, from a few months ago, but you know, it is kind of the worst kept secret, it feels like, at the moment. And you know, certainly, you know, MN ran a story the other week where perhaps Chris Meek now is looking at being the number two driver, as it were, in that third seat, you know, which Kalle would come into would be Jari Matti's seat. You know, Jari Matti's tough season. You've just been talking obviously about Mads and of course about Danny as well. And a story's come out about obviously he's had some tough times in his private life, and I find it really odd that it's come out in such a way, and it's on kind of social media and in kind of motorsport stuff. And I know I'm mentioning it now, but it almost feels like this is kind of uncharted territory for rallying, because we don't normally, that stuff doesn't come into play and it's not normally spoke of in public, and I'm not entirely sure whether it should be.
It's an interesting one. I'd be glad to know if some of our Finnish listeners can enlighten us on this, and whether it's sort of instigated by maybe like the newspapers in Finland or something like that, because Jari Matti obviously was the one to release this on his social media. So, you know, I wonder if that was him trying to get ahead of, you know, maybe tabloids finding out or something, or if it's something that the Finnish press care about. I'm not really sure, but yeah, it was an interesting one for him to put that statement out, and it maybe needed to, you know, he felt like he needed to do it from a personal point of view, and it was actually nothing to do with anybody else or anyone finding out. Maybe he just felt he needed to make that announcement for himself. But it's an interesting one. Like you said, it's pretty uncharted territory when it comes to rally drivers, usually quite private and, you know, keep that kind of thing to themselves. But, you know, fair do to him if he, you know, if he, it's obviously taken a lot of courage to come out and say something like that. There's obviously got to be a reason behind it. So, fair play for coming out like that.
Basically, if you're unfamiliar with the story, basically, Jari was due to get married. He's now not getting married. You know, and that's basically the story. You know, we're not going anywhere else with this. But I was just more surprised, but whether that's accountable for him having a tough period in the car, we really, really don't know. But, you know, we're not going to cover too much old ground. But last week, if you listen last week, Julian Porter and I talked about this quite a bit. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, Jack, I keep on going back to the fact that the warm bosom, in inverted commas, of M Sport, to me, is what kind of Jari needs. And you know, but obviously we realise there's financial implications. The Japanese people are, you know, are massive fans of Jari Matti, and he brings such heritage and knowledge and love of rallying as well. You know, whether it'd be kept around by Toyota or whether, you know, it would be a shared car or whatever. But to me, it's almost like he needs that Malcolm arm around them again, which has served so many drivers so well.
Well, let me address the Chris Meek thing first. I've been critical of both of these drivers over the past. Anyone who's listened to the podcast will have heard me mouth off about Chris Meek and Yari Matti Latvala on many occasions. But I think Chris Meek is ahead for that seat next year, and he should be, because he's pretty much on his day. He's a threat for victory, and we've maybe not seen that so much this year. I think that's a lot down to circumstance with a new car and a difficult teammate to fight with as well. And you know, he's been given a very serious job to score manufacturer points, and I think that'll serve him well for next year. But he's been in contention for wins a lot more times over the past two or three years than Yari Matti Latvala has. And the second bit about M Sport. Let me come at this from a different angle that maybe I've not seen anyone really approaching this from. Yes, you know, it'd be a dream for Yari Matti Latvala to go back to M Sport, but if I was M Sport, Yari Matti Latvala would be the last driver on my list, to be honest, because they're a team who struggle for budget. And Yari Matti Latvala is, maybe he's going to take obviously at the minute he's paid. Maybe be willing to drive for a smaller amount or maybe on a free or something for M Sport, maybe. But he's proven himself to be inconsistent, and that's the last thing M Sport need when it comes to fixing cars. With the resources they've got, they're already sort of behind most of the other teams in the WRC as well for me. So, while he might deliver the odd good result for M Sport, he's not going to be the kind of consistent driver that M Sport need at the minute, that can consistently, like Elvin basically, he was fourth in the championship even after missing two events with his back injury, and that was through his strong runs through the first half of the year. So as a team, in terms of the actual fit, alright, it might be a fairy tale for Yari Matti Latvala to end his career where he started, but in terms of the fit for next season and what M Sport are trying to do, Latvala wouldn't be anywhere near my considerations.
Okay. I think probably.
Luckily, Tony, I'm not a team boss, so it doesn't matter.
Well, neither am I, and that's the point. Neither am I. I'm guessing it's just that management thing, which we keep coming back to, which is massively, it's been almost the unspoken thing for many, many years. But we've talked quite a lot recently about Adamo and the way he's decided to motivate his drivers by bringing drivers in and bringing drivers out and stuff like that. And I keep on using this kind of football manager type kind of thing for him. And for me, it's a similar thing that clearly we're now getting to the stage where drivers perhaps need to be a bit more managed and a bit more looked after. It's not an easy job. And I know it's a job that everybody would probably kill to do, but it's not an easy job, and the pressures that come with it and the travel and everything else. And maybe Yari just needs that kind of little bit of love. I don't know. And it was me perhaps playing fantasy manager as opposed to kind of trying to get anything started for Yari to go back to M-Sport.
You're right as well. And a lot of people have talked about it. It's been on social media a lot, especially a lot of British fans, obviously keen, big Yari Matti Latvala fans keen to see him back where he started. And, in that sense, it would be a real fairy tale story. And I think you're right to raise it. And it could happen. It's very, very possible if Yari's willing to take a bit of a pay or drive for free for a season, then it's very possible that we could see Yari Matti at M Sport, and he might under Malcolm rekindle a bit of that form. But to be honest, I don't think he's been in bad form recently. I know the Rally GB shunt was a bit stupid, but before that he'd had the podium in Finland, the podium in Germany, and then he was top five, top six in Turkey as well. So I don't think he's been in particularly bad form recently either. It's just that inconsistency that we get with him. It's a good result and then three bad ones, or three good results and then a couple of bad ones. And it's just very up and down with him, isn't it? When you've got someone like, I keep harking back to it, but I still think he's been one of the best drivers this year. When you've got Danny Sordo just constantly, he's missed three or four events and then pops back in and bangs in a top five straight away. It's like, what are we doing wrong with Yari? He just needs to get to the end of rally. He's got the car to do it.
Well, just looking at the championship table now, if we can come back to Spain this weekend, and obviously everybody's there. Toyota have got their normal driver lineup, of course, with Oit, Chris, and with Yari Matti. Hyundai have rolled the dice, if you could call it rolling the dice, putting your boyhood hero in. I'm not entirely sure.
It's a massive gamble.
It's a massive gamble. Who'd do that? Who'd put a 9-time world champion in and the man who won the event last year in a car that clearly maybe didn't work as well as what it should have? Hey, who'd be mad enough to do that?
I would, for sure.
Well, I know you would, Jack. I know you would.
First team sheet.
Yeah, first name on the team sheet. I like that. It's all to lose for pretty much Oitanak and Toyota this weekend.
I think so. You can look at it in two different. There's two ways to look at it, and you can look at it in two different ways.
I mean, not will it, either way will work.
Basically, Sebastian Ogier needs to. Well, Tanak needs to finish two places in front of Ogier to win the championship, doesn't he? Guaranteed. If Oit doesn't win it this weekend, he's still got another opportunity. So things roll over. I think there's a bit more pressure on Sebastian Ogier to keep things alive, I think, going into the last round. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I think you mentioned Loeb. I think obviously last year he won the event, but it was down to as much as it pains me, this is like a spear through the heart to say this. It was a bit of a lucky one. He made a very good tyre choice, obviously, but that could have.
That's not luck though, because if you remember, Jack. Come on, if you remember, that was a last-second kind of change.
Yeah. But that could have backfired massively, and he could have lost four or five positions. There's always a bit of luck involved in tyre gambles, but it was obviously genius because it was Sebastian Loeb. But basically, let's put it down to this: the car shouldn't have really won that event. So, however you look at it, it was a good tyre decision, but the car wasn't good enough to win that event. Coming into this weekend, he's very much in support of Thierry Neuville. Obviously, Danny Sordo was there as well, and still wanting to win that Rally Spain. And it was obviously, we had that story a bit earlier in the year where he said he'd hire a car to do it because he's that motivated to do well. So I think they're both going to be in support of Thierry Neuville, who's very much a title underdog. I think depending on how Thierry gets on, that'll define what Sebastian and Danny get to do. If Thierry looks like he's going to be out of it quite early on, because he needs to claw back a lot of points on Oitanak, and they might let them off the reins. But even if they do let them off the reins, I think they're going to struggle to beat Oitanak. The car was head and shoulders above anyone else last year in Oit's hands before the puncture, and all we've seen this year is a dominant Toyota. So I think it'd be very difficult to beat Oitanak, and I can definitely see him winning the event this weekend.
I'm kind of going. I kind of almost feel that. That Thierry's done.
I
just think that everything now will be on the manufacturers for Hyundai.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of pressure for that. I think obviously Adamo has come in and been successful this year so far, and he'll be very much if anything for his own CV will be wanting that one. I think Thierry, if I know Thierry anywhere near as well as I think I do, he'll never give up until the very last stage, and he'll be going flat out until he reaches that point, and no one will be able to pull him in that sense. But I think as soon as that chance is kind of out the window, that's when we'll see a little bit of throttling back for the manufacturers championship. But that's going to be interesting to see, because it's not just the drivers championship that we're looking at. It's a very tight manufacturers battle, and all the drivers have got responsibility to fight for that for their teams as well.
Just carrying on from something that Julian and I spoke about last week as well. The manufacturers obviously is such a big, that's why they're there. At the end of the day, the drivers are there for, Julian spoke quite a lot about the selfishness of rally drivers, and we've all been guilty of it at various levels as well over the years, from the bottom up, so to speak. And obviously, this thing about trying to win a manufacturer's title, it's wrong really how the championship is, and Julian said, perhaps the sport needs to do something about this as well, is that everybody remembers the driver's championship winner and the car that he won it in. But not many people always necessarily remember who the manufacturer's winner is. And that's arse about face, surely, because the manufacturer, that's paying for it all.
Yeah, but that's been the case since basically motorsport began, hasn't it, really? The drivers are the ones with the egos and the ones that the fans all care about. And the car is just a method of getting the driver to the championship. It's not considered to be the first thing that people think about, is it? I take your point, it's very important for the manufacturers that they're acknowledged, and they're the ones pumping all the money into the sport. But for as long as I've been alive, and probably for as long as you've been alive, and a long time before that, it's all been about the drivers' championship, and they're the ones who are covered in the glory. And it's the bigger problem is the co-drivers. The fact that no one talks about the co-drivers winning championship, a championship alongside the drivers. It's always Oit Tanak won the championship, and in 30 years' time, a lot of rally fans won't remember who Oit Tanak's co-driver was. You know, for me, that's an even bigger problem because they're right there in the car with them, and a key part of the win itself. But obviously, the teams provide so much support for the drivers. The drivers are so well looked after these days that the teams obviously deserve a big part to play. I think I take Julian's point actually that maybe the sport needs to do something about it, but I think it has the way the current championship works in terms of nominating the drivers to score points, top two score points, and the way the kind of championship plays out now. I think we're hearing a lot more talk about the team's championship, and it certainly feels like that from my point of view anyway. That's just a personal opinion, but it seems like over the past couple of seasons that we're getting more people talking about those championships, so that'd be good to see. I do think they deserve acknowledgement, but I think it's wrong to think you're going to change people's minds that the drivers' championship's ever going to be the number one thing people look for.
No, I'll have that. Do you want to tell you what I find really interesting as well from this week? And obviously, Ryan Champion was quite passionate about this. And I know we've had Gus Greensmith on talking about as well, this kind of the WRC2 Pro and WRC2. There's 26 R5s out this weekend, Jack. And yeah, we've got Skoda, we've got Volkswagen, we've got Ford, we've got Hyundai. And it's almost like that. I know they've done away now with Pro and how it's going to be, but it's almost like there needs to be a teams or at least a manufacturer title for me for WRC2 now as well.
Possibly, yeah. It's an interesting one, isn't it? I'm sure my opinion's slightly different on the whole WRC2 Pro, WRC2 thing, because obviously to people outside of rallying, it's probably confusing. Not knowing, obviously got one class and two championships for it, which is a bit confusing. To me, if you write it all down on a piece of paper, it all makes perfect sense. Splitting I'm going to get blasted by Ryan Champion for this next week. I better explain this in great detail. Sorry, strap in guys, get your seatbelts on because I'm going to be talking for the next 10 minutes. The WRC2 Pro Championship separates from the WRC2 Championship, obviously. So, for me, I've covered a lot of R5 drivers over the past 3 or 4 years, and the biggest thing is always that there's always either a works manufacturer or a big team that does 300 miles of testing before an event and turns up on the event with a perfect setup and knows the conditions perfectly. And there's someone from a national championship or from a little bit of a less well-funded background who turns up having done a 40-50 mile test and spends the first 5 stages learning and is basically out of the event by that point because the guys who have done so much testing. I mean, some of the numbers you hear about Robin Pera testing, the number of miles he's done in a Fabia is pretty astounding. So for me, it makes perfect sense to divide the two up. And let me just say this as well, because at this point,
I'll hold your coke, Jack. Don't worry, I'll hold your coke. Go on.
At this point, Ryan Champion screaming into his microphone, "No, it's too confusing." but I'm going to be totally honest about this. The only people who care about WRC2 are the people who follow rallying. No one outside of rallying is writing massive reports, doing big news stories, doing features on drivers in R5s. It's not happening. So the only people who need to understand what WRC2 Pro and WRC2 is are the people in rallying. So, I think anyone I've ever spoke to in the paddock, in the service park, obviously, understand.
Yeah, I can't believe you've just discredited everything you said when you said paddock, Jack.
Just taking the mic. I'm trying to lighten up my monologue. So yeah, hit us up on Twitter and let us know what you think about that. But I honestly think there's no one in the British media writing a story about Jan Kopecký or Kalle Rovanperä winning the WRC2 Championship or the WRC2 Pro Championship. So I admit it's a convoluted the way the system works, but I like the fact that you're giving the privateers a chance to win something. Do you really need a manufacturer's championship for that? I'm not really sure.
Let me just run this past you, and by all means, and as Jack just said, I'll be down with the kids as well. Hit us up, studio at absoluterally.co.uk or absolute_rally on Twitter. But if let me just put the scenario to you: if the manufacturer, if so, it was Volkswagen, Volkswagen, Ford M Sport, Skoda, Hyundai, and Proton. If they manage to pull something out, if anybody's got one of those cars, they score points for the manufacturer that registers for it. Okay, and they get some kind of help or kickback whenever they score points for that particular manufacturer. That's the idea I'm going with. I'm not going to, yeah, like, as manufacturer teams, just private teams that are doing the championship in the respective manufacturer cars can help that manufacturer win a championship, and that would get them some kind of support, whether it's a spares package or whatever it may be, moving forward. That was the rough idea that I came up with.
Yeah, that would be lovely. I like the idea of the kind of, you know, rewarding people for winning the championship, definitely. You know, when you described it originally, I just thought you were talking about, you know, adding up points on a championship table. But if it's some sort of kickback for helping a manufacturer win the championship, and even if that's like a, you know, you get a test in the pro car, and then maybe you do like four or five rallies in a pro car at a discounted rate or something, that would be awesome. But the thing is, there's so many drivers who have either done ERC or stuck at national level because, you know, I'm talking about the last sort of two or three seasons now, because they know if they go into WRC2, they're going to be out of the rally before maybe two, three stages max, because they're going to lose so much time to the guys who've done all the testing beforehand that they're just going to be nowhere. And it's just not, even though the cars are the same, it's not a fair fight. It's not fair ground. And this is a problem when you've got, you know, when you try to, you know, create almost a, in effect, almost a single mate championship. Obviously, R5 isn't, I recognize that, but what you're going for is a set of technical regulations that brings the car as close as possibly, you know, as close as you possibly can together. And you need to, when you do that, you need to limit all of the variables, or you get this situation where you get a break in competition, and you get people breaking away for whatever reason, and the people with the most amount of budget always get that. So you either have to stop the manufacturers putting anything into the sport, which then obviously makes it, you know, fairly pointless for the manufacturers to do it in the first place, or you need to manage the variables better. So it's very difficult for the WRC to manage, I think, how to split that sort of divide between the two sets of drivers that you've got doing the same category. But to be honest, at the minute, I don't see a better way of giving the WRC2 guys who are not testing a better way of being recognised for the fact that they're, you know, a massive disadvantage compared to the other guys in the class in the same cars.
Or basically, manufacturers are not allowed to run their own R5 cars.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. But then, that takes a lot away from their programs, doesn't it? In terms of how many upgrades they bring to the car, how many parts they have, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. So,
but that's, sure, do you know what, Jack? Sorry to interrupt, but yeah, that's how I remember being a kid. Of you had, let's use Ford as an example, because I kind of related to that, because things felt quite close to me then. What I'll explain why. We had the works team, which was done out of Boreham. Then you had RED, which was up the road from us, and Widnes. You know, you had all these little satellite teams. You know, Mike Little preparations up north. You know, Malcolm Wilson himself, you know, was a satellite team for Ford as well. And you had all these little satellite teams, and that's kind of how all these teams, unfortunately, came, and a lot of them went as well.
Yeah. It's we're just in a different time of the sport, aren't we? And it's just the way the classes are laid out and how the sport currently is. It goes in cycles, and sometimes it works perfectly, sometimes it doesn't. And I think fundamentally, that, you know, as much as I complain about how much R5s cost, you can't complain that the category has been successful since it's been introduced, the number of cars that we've got out there.
How wrong have we been about R5?
I don't know. No, I don't think, you know, I'll put
we've
my...
We've been hard on R5, to be fair.
I'll put but my we've proverbial been... nuts on the table, but I don't think I've ever been wrong about R5. I still think it's too expensive, and I'll stick by that until the category's changed and it's something else. For sure, it's a difficult one, but I still think it could be even better. That's the thing. Obviously, R5 is a phenomenal product and a great class, and it's been very successful with the manufacturers that have taken part. But I think it could be even better. I think if you just opened it up slightly, we'd get a lot more competition between you know, bringing more teams in, more cars, and that would bring the price of cost down, engine rebuilds, and all that kind of stuff. But it's all stuff we talked about before, Tony, and all well trodden ground. But at the end of the day, I think those. that I think that having the WRC2 category has brought in at least five or six more drivers that wouldn't have bothered beforehand because they know they're being separated away from those teams that are doing, you know, however many, you know, 100-mile tests before the rallies and stuff.
Okay. Okay. Right. Speaking of time, we're at that point, Jack Bengen, where we need to get your predictions.
Love it.
For Spain.
Let's do it.
Right, Jack Bengen.
Never do I look forward to being wrong more than at this point every week when you ask me this question.
Go on. Right. Hit me up, to use your term, Jack Bengen, third. Let's do it reverse.
You want to do it reverse?
Oh, yeah,
you throw me off. You throw me off now. all right, let's go. I'm going to go Chris Meek third.
Okay.
Sebastian Ogier second.
Yeah.
And Ollie Tanak first.
Ooh. I like that.
Unless you've got anything else to say, let's have yours. I'm looking forward to who you're going to go for, because you usually go for a little bit of a left field, a little bit of a left field entry on there as well. So have you done that this week? Or have you gone?
I'll be honest with you, I have.
Have you?
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
I'm going to go Sebastian Loeb third.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm going to go Ollie Tanak second.
Okay.
And this is going to be the big call, I guess, on this one. I'm going to go Chris Meek to win.
Ooh, like it.
Yep.
It's got a good chance, I think.
Yeah, it's the mixed side to it, which I think.
Yeah. I guess it just depends what Oit's doing and how supportive he has to be of Oit's challenge. But if Oit's out of the way, then I can definitely see Chris.
You've just put the caveat in. I was just about to say, obviously, that does depend on how many places that Sebastian Ogier is behind. And also, of course, how much time there is in between him and Oit, which I don't imagine there's going to be that much. But there you go. So I've made notes of those, Jack. We will revisit it next week when we are finally all back together. You'll be back from sunny Mexico. Ryan Champion will be back from America, and Trevor Agnew will be back from wherever he is at the moment. Well, I can tell you where he is. He's going to be with us after this break. So, Jack, I'm going to say to you, safe travels.
Thank you very much. Do I get to hear your Any Other Business, or do I have to tune into Absolute Rally next week?
To be fair, we haven't done your Any Other Business.
Well, you can have an Any Other Business off me if you like.
Have you? I didn't think you had one, to be fair.
I've always got an Any Other Business.
Go on then, hit me up. I'm going to keep saying that all day now.
You're loving that, aren't you?
I know.
I'm going to hit you up some knowledge. No, not really. Never. That'd be very unusual. Preach. That'd be an absolute rally first from an absolute Bengen, wouldn't it?
Just
very, very interested to see, obviously always promoting my homegrown publication, Motorsport News, but very interested to see that Hyundai Motorsport is working on a complete overhaul to its R5 program, as David Evans writes. So if you've not heard about this, or you've not read about it, go and pick up a copy of MN this week and you can read all about it. Basically, I'm going to go a little bit past the story and talk about what it means, I think, because basically what's happening is Hyundai are going to, they've admitted that they were rushed in their first R5 car and that they need to bring a big update to it. So they're going to do that. And then they're going to introduce a new car the year after. So I think it'll be on sale actually summer 2020 actually. So it'll kind of be the back end of next year. So, the test and development plan's already started for the upgrades on the current car. And there'll be a new car at the end of next year. So I was interested to read that, but more interested that Andre Adamo is thinking that far ahead, because that tells me Hyundai have got a little bit of a longer term interest in the WRC if they're developing an R5 car into, you know, next year and also introducing one in 2020. So it's not a nailed on sort of, you know, Hyundai are going to be in the WRC forever. But I think the fact that they're committing to a new R5 and looking that far ahead with their programs, and that they've got drivers obviously doing the development work, I think that bodes very well for the future of Hyundai in the championship. And also, just wanted to, I'm sure Andrew Cowan's going to be talked about a lot on this podcast, and I was only lucky enough to meet him on a couple of occasions. I'm sure Ryan will have a very nice few words to say about him next time he's on the podcast, but just wanted to pass on my best to his family and all the people who were really close to him and knew him so well, because he was such a big part of rallying, not just in the UK, but in the World Championship as well, and gave a lot back as well. So definitely a massive loss to rallying in this country, and obviously played such a big part in Mitsubishi's World Rally Championship performances, but also so in competing himself and in various other places as well outside of Mitsubishi, he was very key. So very sad to see him go.
No, but it was going to be one of the things I did. So I'm sure we will all talk about it, and Trevor and I'll talk about it as well, because you know, Andrew Cowan, that Mitsubishi era. You know, we've been talking, of course, about Toyota, of course, Tommy Mäkinen, and you know, you think Mitsubishi, you think Tommy Mäkinen, and then you think about Andrew Cowan as well, and you know, rally art and all those other things that spring to mind as soon as you see it, and words I was basically going to say, Jack, but very, very well put. Is that your any other business, my friend?
All done.
Yeah. My any other business was, we've just been talking, of course, about lineups and drivers and stuff like that. It's a kind of keep your chin up for Craig Breen, really. Obviously, it was announced he's not going to be doing Rally Australia. We don't know whether that is the end of perhaps the relationship he was trying to build with High and I. We really, really don't know. But, you know, he's in some ways he's had such a great year, and obviously, you know, is whether GB, what happened on GB affected the decision, we really don't know. But keep your chin up, mate. And hopefully, you know, there will be a way back in for 2020, really.
Well said.
Yeah, that's it. So, Jack, you go and pack your smalls. Folks, you go and put the kettle on. I'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally.
Absolute Rally continues to be partnered by the Kielder Works team, who remain fully committed to the sport and are pioneers of the latest technology. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for all forms of competitive action.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Did you get yourselves a brew? Jack Bengian's packed his smalls. He'll be on an aircraft now, probably landing in Mexico, looking for some... Is it a senorita, Trev? Is it a senorita in Mexico?
It would be, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Definitely. Senorita to put... Or a senor, I don't know. I'm not going to cast aspersions. To put some cream on him somewhere. Because it's his birthday on Thursday. He kept that very quiet. He's 27, our Jack, on Thursday. So, if you're at this point of the podcast where Jack Bengian want to listen to it and you want to just send them something really random, what can we send them on social media? What can we tweet him, Trev?
He needs to wear a sombrero for a start.
Yeah. So we just get people to send them pictures of a sombrero. Let's just do that. Just send Jack a picture of a sombrero. Don't put any text, just a picture of a sombrero, and just see whether he's actually listening to the podcast. He's probably not, in all fairness. So there you go. Obviously, you know Trev's with us now. Hi, Trev. You okay?
I'm good, mate. You?
Happy days. Yes, we're all right. We're all right. We're going to go unprecedented here because we're going to go straight to the predictions, the wild predictions that both Jack Bengian and I put out, which was, I'm going to do Jack Bengian's first. Okay. Oitanak to win. Sebastian Ogier second. And Chris Meek third.
He's so predictable, isn't he? Tanak every time.
Yeah. But to be fair.
I know, it's predictable. It has to be a bit different.
Okay, well, if you want different, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do it in reverse order, just to spice it up a little bit. Third, Sebastian Loeb. Mm-hmm. Second, Oitanak. Mm-hmm. First, Chris Meek.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
Now, the caveat.
So, whoa, say that again.
Loeb, Tanak, yeah. Meek to win.
So Meek's going to allow...
No. There's a caveat, Trev. Let me get the caveat out because you didn't hear the first bit. All the listeners are going, Trev, what? He explained this when he said it. Right. Basically, what I'm saying is...
So he needs 2 points. Let me guess. So he needs 2 points, Tanak, and he's won the championship. So clearly then that'll allow Meek to win as long as the rest of them are behind him.
Yes.
Right, okay, got it.
Yeah, that's where I was going. That's where I was going. Okay. So, I'm not going to put you under any pressure, but would you like to you put yours on the table now, so to speak?
Yeah, so if something happens to Tanak on the last day and he doesn't finish the rally, then it's going to be very exciting getting into Australia. Don't wish that on him. Clearly, he's got the momentum. He hasn't put a foot wrong. He's probably going to win the rally. But if he didn't then, and he didn't finish in the top three, and Ogier won it, then that'll be exciting. So we'll go Ogier, we'll go Neville try and keep it going. I actually might do it the other way around. Just this is hopeful for the championship. Go Neville, we'll go Ogier.
Okay.
And then we'll stick Elvin Evans in there as well because he's going to go fast.
Evans.
Good road position. Good road position first day, and he's going to be up there. So
Elvin
in
Evans.
Reverse,
yeah.
It's Evans, it's
yeah.
Ogier, and Neville to win it. Just to keep the championship alive. There's no like logic in it in any way. But that'd be exciting, wouldn't it?
It would be. And to be fair, Elvin went very well there last year. So
yeah.
I can see where you've gone with that. The only thing I'd say with regards to that, and again, Jack and I kind of talked a little bit about this. I feel that the Hyundai drivers will be under massive pressure to behave themselves and deliver manufacturer points.
Yeah, but Neville's not going to listen to that, is he? Is he? Yeah, he's no. A chance of championship. How many times did he finish second?
Yeah. Do you think he has got a chance, though, Trev? I know if both cars, you know, God forbid both cars broke down on the last two
yeah.
rallies, then of course he has. But reality, do you think it's just a little bit away from him now? Again?
Of course, like clearly, you know, it's not in his hands, it's in the other two guys' hands and reliability. But again, as I say, if something happens in the last day, it can easily happen in this rally as well. Then it's going to leave it wide open for Australia if he wins it and gets some bonus, you know, if he gets 5 points on the power stage as well. So he goes out of here with 30 and the other two don't score, then there we go. That's hopeful for the championship, and we'll have it as exciting as last year. But clearly Tannock's going to win it and walk away with it and the championship's over. At least he doesn't need to win it anyway, he just needs two more points, doesn't he?
Do you know what? He does. But do you know what? I'm kind of kicking myself a little bit because I really probably should have put Danny Sordo in there.
Yeah, you say that. Danny will go quick. Of course, his road position the first day is going to help him. Traditionally, he's always up there. If I remember from last year, he was probably leading it on the Saturday. But it's just this thing with Danny, and I remember from my radio days, he seems to, in the second run of stages, he seems to just go off the pace, or everybody seems to go quicker than him. And he's always been in really good positions, but has just dropped back a little bit in the second run of stages. And so, yeah, we'll see where he ends up. Definitely be up there. If he's not leading it at the end of the first day, he might even be leading it by midday on Saturday. But he just needs to keep that pace going.
Yeah. Yeah. We kind of talked about this a little bit. I'd love your take on this. And I've said this to the listeners as well, by all means, obviously, studio@absoluterally.co.uk. Do we do the manufacturers a bit of a disservice, Trev?
In what way?
And Julian mentioned this on last week's podcast, and I also mentioned it to Jack, as I say earlier on, with regards to, you know, they're spending all the money, and it's always the drivers that comes first, and yet without the manufacturers, we wouldn't have the drivers, if that makes sense, or we would, but you know where I'm going with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's clearly very important for the manufacturers to win it, to use publicity and legacies, what they use to go forward.
I tell you what, Trev, right, sorry to interrupt, and it's interesting that you went with that, because I think you're of an era and of an age, because we're not a million miles apart age wise, so I'm gonna put that in very, very quickly before you send this lawsuit out. But do you think the general public really care about whether Hyundai or Toyota have won a manufacturers?
Probably not, but that's not how marketing works. It's all about brand awareness. So, you know, a man considering buying an i20 versus a Ford Fiesta versus a Toyota Yaris isn't going to look at the world championship. Well, that one won, so I'm going to buy one of those. That's not how it works. It's all about brand awareness, keeping the brand in the public. And of course, traditional ways of advertising don't work anymore. So we know social media and the online presence is king, influencing people. And that's where things happen. But yeah, I think of manufacturers, it's a bit like Formula One, really. Who knows who won the manufacturers last year? Probably Mercedes. They've already won it this year, I think, haven't they? So people struggle to remember who won the manufacturers. They definitely remember who won the Drivers' Championship. And I think that applies to both championships.
And they always remember what car they were in as well.
Yeah, well, who won it last year? Who won the manufacturers last year? Do you know off the top of your head, quick?
Toyota.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
A lot of people will probably have to think about that.
Yeah, it's only the fact that obviously we immerse ourselves in it is that I could answer that straight away. But likewise, if you would have asked me Formula One, and I'm not really up on roundy-roundy, as we know, Jack Benyon, our boy, normally is, because that's why he's going up to Mexico. But, you know, if you asked me that, I genuinely, when you said it was probably Mercedes, I kind of went, I don't know. I've got nothing. It probably is. I don't know. But it probably is. So, no, I take that. I take that. I just wonder whether, with all that's gone on, with obviously the big changes at Hyundai and you know, the way Adama's come in and done what he's done, and he's brought in specialists and he's brought drop drivers and more drivers back in, you would think that there's good at that. Yeah, you know, they really need to secure something this year, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and they've got a strong team, haven't they? You've got Neville there, who is flat out and is in my shadow in the rally. Loeb won it last year. And he did a climb to his car really quick. Again, him and Sorda have good starting positions on the gravel on Friday. Remember Loeb last year, that simple tire choice on the last day.
Jack called that lucky, by the way.
Well, you say that, but he was quite good at that in his days, wasn't he?
I said Trev won't have that.
but he used to be like that. Certainly in Monte Carlo, he always got his guys out on the stages and he could read it quite well. And he takes all that information on board. And last minute shout, he went with his gut. And his gut usually was always very right. Remember, the roads are a lot more abrasive in the last day. And it was apparent on the first stage. If you look back at it, I bet you the roads were a little bit damp. It certainly was cloudy in the last day. And it definitely wouldn't have been the obvious choice, but he did it. Yeah. So you've got him and Sordo. So that's a strong team as regards manufacturers. If all three of those, two out of three, of course, can only score. But if they're up there in the top five, then it's definitely going to be a hard team to beat, I think.
I couldn't agree more. But yeah, I must admit, I'm kind of fascinated. And I guess we were talking, I don't know whether it was on the podcast genuinely, because I talk rallying with so many different people, but we were talking about what happened with Subaru and Pro Drive, where, you know, one day they registered for the championship and the next day they pulled. And I just hope we're never in that position again with one of these teams if they don't win the championship, which is why, and I said this probably a couple of seasons ago on a podcast, I kind of feel like we need Hyundai to win it.
Yeah, well, we're always thinking from a rally point of view, and we always assume that everybody right at the top end of these companies, Hyundai Motor Company, whatever it's called, are all thinking the same way. Of course, they're not. And whoever runs the motorsport program, whoever secures the budget for that, has to fight their corner with every other way of marketing the brands that we're talking about. You know, and we see the same with Citroën. You know, we've got Linda Jackson, who's the CEO, who seems to be quite involved. You see her at rallies quite a bit. And people are saying the same about them. At what point? You know, there's always this speculation over when these manufacturers are going to go and disappear. And, you know, I'd like to think at least Toyota, Hyundai will keep going because they're the ones who clearly got the best budget. M Sport, I remember about this time last year, Malcolm Wilson was saying, well, what's the point in going there? We don't sell these type of rally cars. And we've certainly got a strong R5 program, but he found a way of doing it. Maybe that conversation is going to happen again for next year unless he finds budget from somewhere. And this clearly an interest from everybody to keep the manufacturers involved. If they're not there, then who's going to pay for it?
Exactly. And that is genuinely my fear. I kind of had this, and again, this is one of those parallel conversations which I can't remember whether we did it on a podcast or whether we did it with someone else. But Jack and I were talking at the top of the pod with regards to the big changes, the big aerodynamic changes that Citroën have been trying. Obviously, they can't bring anything out for the remainder of this year because they've used all their jokers. But I thought it was a signal of intent, to be perfectly honest with you, Trev, that they're going to try and get that C3 work in any way they can for at least Loeb's, going back in time, Ogier's last year. You know, to show that basically we're still here, we're still fighting. But I would not be surprised to see Citroën at the end of next year genuinely step to one side until the next set of regulations are issued. And again, I wouldn't be surprised to see perhaps the Peugeot brand come back and give it a fresh kind of feel all over again.
What makes you say that? Why Peugeot?
Because obviously, you know, we had Peugeot, in many ways, we kind of had Peugeot first, and, you know, the young pretenders, I'm going back, obviously, to when Loeb was first coming through, with the F2 car and stuff like that, and Philippe Galski, you know, Peugeot were the dominant force then, and then Citroën kept creeping up, and then Citroën surpassed them, and Peugeot stepped to one side, and went, you know, another route, as it were. They went, you know, IRC, Super 2000, that type of thing. And then, you know, that's kind of gone down to a customer program as such now. And maybe just a fresh brand. And Peugeot's got a lot of heritage, hasn't it? It's got just, pretty much in different ways, just as much heritage, maybe not as many world titles, but certainly, you know, heritage in the sport. And maybe just that fresh piece of paper of one of the sister brands would be, you know, just a fresh feel to it, and maybe not carry the baggage of what's gone on over the last year or two.
Yeah, again, it depends on who's the top of the brand and PSA in general as to what direction they're going to go. Probably have a bit of that going on in the Volkswagen group as regards what their rallying activities were in the past, and we've had that with Skoda and Volkswagen. Didn't make a lot of sense at one point, and still we've got Volkswagen R5s, we've got Skoda R5s. Not necessarily factory with the Volkswagen, but yeah, it depends at the top who's there and who's interested in it and what the strategy is as regards hybrid and electric cars going forward. This is a big thing a lot of people don't understand, Tony. Going to 2021, in Europe, the pool of cars that are manufactured, every manufacturer has to get under 95 grams of CO2. That involves a lot of electric cars and a lot of plug-in hybrid cars. Because a lot of these companies, car companies, are going to fail that, which leads to massive fines. And it's all for the greater good, of course. I'm maybe turning into a bit of a hippie, as I said before. But this Paris Agreement, we all signed up for it, means that car manufacturers have to do their bit regards keeping the CO2 down. And there's a massive push on at the minute to get it below 95 grams by 2021. And that's going to impact on what they're going to do from a competition point of view. Hence, a lot of the manufacturers moving to Formula E.
Yeah, which is massively successful. And
hence, we've got, of course, an electric car coming, which we're going to have a rally championship with that, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah. It's basically, no, well, we kind of previewed it a little bit. Obviously, the guys behind the Opel Adam Cup over in Germany, which has been mega successful. You know, some Brits have gone over and done that, and, you know, fantastic little cars. The next evolution of that championship will be an all-electric Corsa. I think there was some tests done the other week. I would genuinely like to try one. I would genuinely like to try one just to see what it's all about. So if anyone's listening in Germany, Absolute Rally would like to come to Germany, preferably before all the borders go up. But anyway, there you go. Trev, before we go down the rabbit hole of electric, once again, something which I think we're going to talk more and more about as the next season or two unfolds. Spain this coming weekend. It's not an event you've done, Trev. Have you done many events where it's gravel one day, tarmac the next?
I haven't done any.
Have you?
Harry, what is it? The Nicky Grist?
Nicky Grist, yeah, three years ago. Yeah. Go on, sorry, Trev. It was a weird one for me. I'll be honest with you. I haven't done a lot of tarmac anyway, so, and it was on Eppens, and Eppens I always find quite daunting at the best of times, to be perfectly honest with you. So going from gravel onto Eppens, yeah, it wasn't great. It was absolutely, in fact, the rally got cut short because the weather was so bad up there, the driving rain and everything else. So very, very, well, ironically, not too dissimilar to what the rain they're getting in Spain at the moment. But yeah, it's a funny old one, and of course, one that we're going to lose very shortly.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the last one. My understanding is it won't be allowed in World Championship going forward, mixed surface rallies. My first rally, actually, first World Championship rally was San Remo in 97. And I think it was the first year we were based out. It was all based in San Remo. Prior to that, of course, they were using Tuscany for gravel and then coming up and swapping over. So I just missed out on that by a year. So Spain will be the last time that we run gravel on day one and then tarmac on the other 2 days. I imagine going forward it's going to be a tarmac rally again. So, yeah, it's certainly some the teams love it, the mechanics, the technicians love it, gets them stuck in, and it's interesting, isn't it? A driver, you could tell us, you know, what you think about it, driving on gravel with all the moving about and everything, to readjust and go out straight away on a tarmac road, first stage the next day, it certainly just shows you the skill of these guys that can do it and be within tenths of a second of each other again.
It is phenomenal. Obviously, you know, we only did it in a little group N car, so, you know, it wasn't a massive change. We changed some brakes, we changed some springs, and we changed, obviously, the wheels and tyres, and away we went. But, mm-hmm. Again, like you say, I think we almost take for granted sometimes, and I had lots of conversations with people quite recently with regards to Rally GB, and obviously with the coming to Liverpool, so I met lots of people, and we talked about it, and you know, until you start showing people just what the sport's all about and how tight it is, you know, the tenths of seconds, you know, going through a forest stage or going through a tarmac stage, most people don't really know. And I think we take it a little bit for granted, Trev, to be honest with you, that it's just the way it is now. When you look at some of the older results, and again, feeling a bit rosy-colored spectacles here, there used to be minutes separating drivers. Yeah. Now we are literally, it is a hair's breadth.
It's just incredible. You see stage times after 15, 20, even 30 kilometres, and they're tenths of a second apart. You know, you're going to get that in Spain as well. I think it's the third stage, the first four service is going to be 39 kilometres long. That's going to be a big test, I think, because somebody could go in there and have a real flyer on it and be leading the rally at lunchtime with 4 or 5 seconds, and that would be a huge gap, wouldn't it?
It would be. I'm just really looking forward to seeing. I can't remember, and again, maybe it's just me, because we've just had this dominant era, I suppose, of Loeb, and I suppose, you know, there was a couple of years, of course, that year with Mika Hirvonen, and where they went into Rally GB. There was that one that kind of springs to mind, I guess. But other than that, it kind of feels like we've just had this domination throughout most of the championships over the last few years, and obviously the ones with Thierry and Sebastien Ogier going hammer and tong have been tight, but this just feels like what we've been crying out for and it kind of feels why these regulations were actually brought out as well, to kind of have everybody start from ground zero and go again, as it were. And it just gave us something that I think the sport's been crying out for a good few years, because, you know, I can remember people getting bored of Loeb winning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And I can remember that era where people going, oh, he's just going to win, isn't he? And it's like, yeah, he is. And, you know, God forbid, there was nearly a time where we were going to get that with Volkswagen and Ogier, and, you know, and then Volkswagen, you know, pulling out, we were talking about Subaru, of course, before, but then Volkswagen doing what they did. Mm-hmm. You know, if they would have carried on, you know, would we have had a similar era again of just Volkswagen domination with Sebastien Ogier, the way Citroën was with Sebastien Loeb? So the mix-up has been great over the last few years, and, you know, it was unfortunate to lose a manufacturer. It was great we got some new set of regulations, and it was great, to be fair, we've also had drivers step forward. And, you know, you think about Oit Tanak and you think about Thierry Neuville, they're not really that intimidated, I don't think.
No, the point being, the 2017 cars meant that there were four manufacturers starting again with completely new regulations, including things such as active centre diffs, the aero, all of that made it very exciting, but I still don't think it was the right way to go as regards regulations of the car, making them faster, making them look less like road cars. Of course, they're exciting to watch, but they were equally as exciting in 2016, if you look back at any of the videos of that. My bigger concern is trying to break into those cars again, trying to get young people in, which was going to be my Any Other Business. But
well, can take us there now, Trev, because we are at the point of Any Other Business, so you can take us there now.
Well, it's just, you know, watching Rally Great Britain, of course we know Rovan Pearce is quick, he's shoe in for Toyota, we know that's happening, but then you look at Oliver Solberg and the performance he had, you know, and just going out in that car in those stages, first time there, and blitzing everybody, which is what he did. And we know those two kids are absolutely talented. Car control and everything that they've learnt over the years has just been brilliant. So if you're in an R5 car, that's your benchmark. That's the competition. That's who you have to beat to get into a manufacturer seat in the next 3 to 5 years. Even less than that, you could even say it's 1 to 3 years. So who else is going to get a chance to get it in, to make it into a third seat in one of those 2017 cars or the current World Rally cars? So definitely your first driver is a given. The second driver is usually someone who's got experience. So we're relying on a third seat in one of the teams in order to get your investment. So my question, I suppose, to the listeners and to you is, if you had 3 million quid now or 5 million pounds or euros or whatever currency you want to go with, and you were investing in a driver, do you think that would be a good business decision? Can you see yourself getting a return on your money in the next 3 to 5 years? Bear in mind that some manufacturers are probably going to leave. With the new electric or hybrid regulations coming in, we might get new manufacturers coming in. But if you had that money, and this money that you could lose, clearly, do you see it as an investment? Do you see that it would be easy to get a driver into a championship? So you think about people who have been quite competitive in R5 cars and WRC2, and there's plenty of names you can come up, and the one who's trying to do it at the minute is Tiedemann. And if you look at the rallies that he's done this year in a World Rally car, because you're so limited due to the cost of not being able to test too much, a lot of the time you get maybe half a day and then you're in the shakedown. Then you have to learn on a rally, which is different. So how are you going to make an impact where you can go, I suppose, Teemu Suninen did in Finland a couple of years ago, and go in there and absolutely set times from the start? And there's only exceptional drivers can do that, the like of Oliver Solberg, Kalle Rovanperä. And there's nobody else I can see coming through at the minute that can set blistering times like that. So that's what you have to do if you want to sit in one of these 2017 cars. So, you know, there's plenty of people that can go and can set fastest times and stages, maybe lead by a leg. But nobody consistently blitzing everybody the way that Ogier did, the way that Loeb did, and now clearly the way Rovanperä is doing, and Oliver Solberg is definitely shooting to do all of that again. So what's your thoughts on that?
I want to say yes, of course I would invest the money. Mm-hmm. Because all things are relative, and we, you know, I have supported people over the last few years, so not obviously anywhere near that level, but all things are relative. Mm-hmm. It's difficult without knowing what the future of the championship is going to be, and it's difficult not knowing what the strategy is going to be. Because one thing I think that I find really, really interesting is that Rovanperä has been, you know, to use the term, groomed to be a rally driver from a very, very early age. It was always what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Now, Oliver, we know the passion is for rally, mm-hmm. but we know he's done other stuff as well. You know, he's done rallycross, cross car. He's done, obviously done the demonstration events, obviously with his dad and, you know, Jim Carnes and things like that. Where I'm going with this is that I think Oliver's got some more tools in the toolbox. I think his dad's been very, very, very sharp to give him perhaps other avenues, as well as WRC or as well as rally. And I think that's really clever.
I get that. And it's a good experience to drive in different disciplines, and that'll help him. But I'm definitely convinced that they want to go down the rally route. He wants to be a world rally champion first. Actually, and foremost, listen, before
everything else. Of course he does. But there's a plan. I kind of feel there's a plan B already.
In what way? What?
I feel that, you know, what the legacy of the Solberg name, and, mm-hmm. you know, his dad still doing stuff, you know, and there will be events that he can go and do and still earn a very, very good living.
Yeah, but that's not going to get him into the world championship.
It's not. And that's the point I'm trying to make, is that he's been given more tools to, if worst case scenario, it doesn't quite happen for him, there's other things he can go and do. Is what I'm saying. Whereas, you know, perhaps Rovanperä could go and do those other things. I'm sure he probably could. But I think that the Solberg brand and the way Solbergs have done things is made it, and the results are, you know, the results are there for all to see anyway. But they almost make the results almost secondary sometimes. You know, you know, PES has always been about the story as well. And, you know, I'm very, very, I've got great admiration for how he's transferring all these skills that he's learned over the years over to his son, probably at a lot earlier age than what he learned them. And, you know, it's all about the backstory as well. And the results, of course, are important, but there's so much more. It's almost like a mini soap opera.
I think it's more to do with the commercial side of things, which Petter and Pernilla and that whole Solberg family have been excellent at over the years, including Henning, of course, is raising the money to do it so they can find the money themselves without having an outside investor come in, without getting the manufacturer involved too early, where they can control it, they can pick the events that they want to do and plan the program that's going to have the most effect. And that's a big advantage. So when it gets to the point where he actually gets into a manufacturer team, then they're reaping all of that money back again. Now, Petter, when he stopped his manufacturer drive and he started his own teams, he was able to do that clearly because of the profile he has in Norway and the ability to attract sponsorship. And again, I think he's got a lot of friends who are just absolute motorsport enthusiasts, and they find a way of doing it through the companies, and we've seen the same sponsors on the cars over the years. So that's what Oliver has, which is a big plus. And there's a lot of people saying, well, how come a manufacturer hasn't signed him up already? They might have. We don't know that. We're not party to that. But if I was Petter, I wouldn't be that quick to do that, and just leave your options open. If you can keep funding it the way it's going at the minute, then the more he does and the more successful he is, and more knots he can put on any potential contract when it arrives.
Folks, let us know your thoughts. studio@absoluterally.co.uk, or you can tweet us, of course, @absolute_rally on Twitter, or you can use the Facebook page, facebook.com/absoluterally. Trev, a crack at any other business, and one which could rumble on a little bit. I'm going to let you go now, because I know you've got grown-up things to do. And I've got podcasts to complete and everything else. So Trev, you'll be back with us next week. Hopefully we're going to try and, it is like herding cats. Hopefully we'll all be back around the table next week. Folks, we're going to go to a little break and we'll be back with Alex Gelsomino.
This is Absolute Rally.
Quarter, mid-lift crest, 8-6 right, minus, tightens over jump, opens over 50, sharp left, tightens 5-6 up lift crest, over 17, 5-right.
Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
And welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. If you've got any thoughts on what we've been talking about, studio@absoluterally.co.uk, as we said earlier in the programme. But a friend of the show who's not been on for absolutely ages, and it was one of those ones. His name popped up yesterday, and I thought, I've not spoke to Alex Gelsomino for a while. Alex, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks for having me, and always a big fan of your show. And yeah.
It's great to have you back on, because you've been a very, very busy boy. Now, I'm going to put a point that I put to Phil Mills the other week when we had Phil on after finishing GB with Petter. Phil's had a very quiet life. Since he was semi-retired, we called it from WRC. And then obviously he returned to the Solberg Circus, as he called it, one last time. And I said, you know, how different is your world when you go from that? You know, he's got his own little private business and workshop to come. He said, you just fall straight back into it. He said, but you know, it is, you know, it's obviously nuts. Now, you're going rallying with lots of different people, but you're still doing stuff with Ken, and we all know what kind of following Ken gets. How would you kind of quantify that, where you go from, you know, you're sitting with a lot of young drivers, which we want to talk to you about in a second, but you go from that world to the block world. How would you even handle that? How does that even work for you?
Yeah, well, it's actually a very, very interesting question, Tony. It's something that I started doing, well, after working for Ken exclusively for 10 consecutive years, then his program a few years ago switched to rallycross. So I found myself with a need to, you know, find different opportunities. So starting to work with drivers pretty much all over the world. When you look at our portfolio of drivers, Rhiannon and I work with, it's just been such a variety. At first, it was a bit I don't want to say difficult, but it was a bit different. It was a bit strange. But by now, we're sort of like I got used to it. And yeah, it is just like you said a second ago, it is very much you got to change your mentality, your approach, because let's be honest, when you work with a rally driver, when you work with a rally team, you could have, you know, 10, 15, 20 different drivers. They all have different objectives. They have different goals, and they come from different background and things as such. So to be able to switch your mentality pretty much week in and week out, because, you know, working with one driver this week, the next driver the other week, and Ken the following week, and so on, is quite critical.
If you do that, and obviously we're going to talk about your 19 has been probably, would you say your 2019, you've sat in more variety of cars than any other season? Without looking at it, I've just kind of briefly looked at it, and it goes from R5 cars, obviously through to Ken's Cosworth, through to R4 Mini Coopers, Renault Clio's over in France doing the Clio Championship, which we'll talk about in a second, Fiesta R1s, Fiesta R2s. Is this being your more variant year, is it fair to say, for drivers and cars?
Yeah, it has, actually. When he started the year, my plan was actually to stick to a couple of drivers and a couple of cars and championships, you know, but yes, of course, that didn't happen, and I got sucked into different options and drivers and championships and cars, you know. So it has been the busiest year, actually, for the past, I believe, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 years, and there has been such a variety of cars and drivers, just like you mentioned.
You've been working with some American drivers, of course, which is obviously you were based over in the States for quite some time. So obviously what you did with Ken and various other drivers as well. But there's been some young American drivers that you've been taking to France and you've been taking elsewhere. Tell us a little bit about them and where they're up to, do you think, of their careers?
Yeah, well, the option with this couple of drivers that you mentioned is started all with our training that Rhiannon and I offer, the Oz Rally Pro program. So those drivers have been early in their careers, and they come and work with us and train with us. And from there on, there has been options to work with them at events. And in a particular case with Kiana Erickson Chang, you know, we have had a program where we've done the American Championship, but also Kiana wanted to expand her experience and gain European experiences, so that the Clio RT3 trophy would make complete sense for her in France. And also we worked recently with Ryan Booth, which has been a graduate of one of our programs just 3 months ago, actually. And Ryan has loved the sport so much. He's a former circuit racer that recently made the switch to rallying. He just absolutely loves the sport, and he's gone full head on into this, and has done, I believe 10 rallies in the past 3.5 months, you know. Wow. So it's been quite busy with the last event. The last event, Rhiannon have competed at the Lake Superior Rally in Michigan, but the event before has been Ryan's debut in the WRC at Wales Rally GB. So it's been actually quite rewarding to see all those students coming to us, particular case those two, and progressing to national and then eventually doing their WRC debut this year. So it's quite good.
Obviously you're talking about what you and Rihanna do. When you first started doing the workshops, was it always to try and get people to that point, or was it initially just to do kind of, you know, pace note training and that type of thing? So is this took on a kind of a life of its own already now?
Well, it started pretty mellow, to be honest. It started because Rhiannon and I noticed that in championships like US, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, there was a need what was happening is those championships were going slowly from organizer provided notes and maybe one pass recce to two pass recce. So the drivers and co-driver were in need of some coaching and training and understanding and learning the procedures that are behind, you know, proper pace noting, you know, doing a proper recce and things like that. So that started 5-6 years ago and has progressed to a point that even Rhiannon and I have learned so much over the past few years by even working with drivers at world championship level and at different levels. So our knowledge and our experience has increased. So we were able to step up our program, our programs to a level that allows us to have a driver with absolutely zero experience and bringing him to within 3 or 4 months to, you know, a WRC event and setting some decent times in the case of Ryan Booth in the JWRC entry that he had at Wales Rally GB. So it's been quite a good progression, and now it's been really, really good to see the level that we are able to achieve with the training, but also the requests that we are having. And just last night, there were a bunch of requests coming from Australia and New Zealand. So Rhiannon is busy scheduling as much training as we can. But, you know, rallying, being in the rally car is always our main priority. And when Oz Rally Pro program started a few years back, it was always, the goal was to fill the holes in our rally calendar. But I can tell you that last year, Oz Rally Pro was actually our biggest income. You know, it kept us the most busy during the year. So this year has been a little bit slower because we have chose to spend more time in the rally car because it's what we love, what we really want to do mainly. So, but it's still, it's great to see that we are booked with our training for 2-3 months in advance.
Which is fantastic. Can I ask you, obviously, you started a lot of your career, early career, certainly was in the States with various drivers, but how is rally seen in the States these days? Because we've had the dominance of Subaru America over the last, feel it's 10 years, isn't it, of course, with David winning, you know, the titles that he's won pretty much. But how is the sport... do you feel the sport's moved forward now? Are we getting, obviously you've mentioned two drivers you've been involved with, obviously I'm thinking of the other American driver that's been doing ERC and the American Championship, whose name has gone out my head. He's got a fantastic mustache though.
Sean Johnson,
thank you. Sean obviously come from a racing background as well. What's the perception in the States when you're out in the States now? Because you've seen it go from, you know, small club events almost to being perhaps something a little bit bigger now. Am I getting that right? Because I'm not seeing it firsthand. How is rally seen now?
Absolutely true, Tony. Actually, rallying is quite healthy in North America right now. It's a combination of factors. Obviously, there is a big presence of Subaru of America that has given an important boost to the championship through sponsorship and their presence of the factory team and drivers. And the other thing that we have had in the past few years, the stock market and the economy has been quite good. So people have actually, and drivers have a lot of disposable income. So it's been interesting to go to national events in North America in the last year, 2 years. And actually, you look around and you see drivers and cars that you don't even recognize. In about 50% of the field, I don't even know them. So there is a lot of fresh faces, a lot of new cars, and the entries are strong. There is a lot of events. So it's quite healthy right now. And actually, I was noticing that in North America right now, we have a lot of R5 cars and R2 cars that have been brought in from Europe. And look, it may not sound a lot, you know, when you have like 10 R5 cars or maybe 15 R2s. But for a place like North America, that is a lot because it's always been a championship and a series that do not follow the FIA rules. But rallying has been strong here in the past couple of years, and competitors are keen to go and invest and buy cars from Europe and bringing them in. So it's been quite refreshing to see that. How long that is going to last, we don't know. Rallying, just like in any country, especially in North America, goes up and down in cycles, you know. But right now, it's quite strong, especially, like I said a moment ago, there is a lot of rallies, which could be a bit of a problem because on the long run, it could become a bit of like a survival of the fittest, you know, as far as rallies goes. You
something
know.
We've had in the UK.
It's a strong championship. There is a lot of events. So we're quite enjoying that.
Okay. Can I ask you about, you're one of the few people who we can speak to. Ryan, who normally does the podcast with us, of course, has been out and tested an R4 car over with one of the teams over there. But you've actually done an event in an R4 car. just obviously you've sat in all kinds of machinery over the years. How did R4 feel to you? Because we're kind of left scratching our heads where it's all going to fit in a little bit. And, you know, it's meant to be the category underneath R5 and make it more cost effective. How was R4 for you?
It was a positive experience, Tony. I really enjoyed it. We were able to have a quite a good comprehensive test in Finland. And then I did a round of the Finnish championship. The car feels quite strong on the engine side. It was actually quite surprising to see that power-wise it's really, really good. Chassis and everything else, you know, yes, it's a step below the R5, but by speaking to the team and the people that on the car made me realize that there is quite a bit of savings in money when compared to the R5 car. Also, when you open the bonnet and you look under, you know, you see that the parts are not those super expensive parts that you would see maybe in an R5 on one of the latest cars. So overall, yeah, there is a savings in costs and initial price. I don't know exactly how much, but I was impressed by the car, the chassis, especially the power. It felt really strong, and obviously they have an option to do different variations and different body styles and make and models based on the same chassis or mechanics or something along those lines. So I am not entirely sure, but I believe there has been recently an option to make the car, homologate the car for FIA racing. So I think this new class will bridge the competition in between two-wheel drive and R5s, which in my opinion is too much of a gap, you know, price-wise and speed-wise and everything. There will be a nice bridge that complements those two classes right in the middle, a little bit like we had a few years ago when we had, you know, the old, you know, Mitsubishi's Evos and Subaru Imprezas, which are now a little too old to compete, but they were a nice bridge between two-wheel drive and the most powerful back then, you know, Super 2000 or an early R5 cars.
Completely agree. I genuinely do want it to work, and I just hope it does, to be perfectly honest with you. You've just mentioned older cars. Can we ask you about how the COSI World Tour is going?
Yeah, it's coming really well. Actually, we started the year and we were a bit struggling with reliability, you know, and setups and things like that. But it's obvious when you only have 200Ks on a car, and that car, yeah, it's sort of like a one-off prototype, because we have done a lot of modern parts, you know, like the transmission. There is a lot of new bits in the suspension and everything. So it was a bit frustrating earlier in the year when we were on gravel, and we still need quite a bit of kilometers on gravel. All we've done this year is a round of the American Championship and Whangarei in New Zealand. Then we moved to tarmac and things started to work better for that car. We've done Donegal and then Legend 2 weeks ago, where Ken and I had a good results. And then, of course, we ran zero car at Rally du Valais last week, and we were able to put even more kilometers. So I was exchanging messages with Ken last night, and he was telling me that he's actually feeling comfortable. You know, he's feeling comfortable in the car, able to push it to the limits of whatever that car can do. You know, we can't touch the R5 cars, but it's not far off. So it's something that that car is a great idea when it comes to marketing, and the fans love it, the spectators, the sponsors love it, the event organizers and promoters, to a point that we've been invited next year to a bunch of events, and it looks like there's gonna be another COSI World Tour next year. You know, fantastic. Covering other areas of the world, you know, other events and things like that. So it's been something that the driver, the team like it, and everyone else, you know. So it's a brilliant idea, in my opinion.
Absolutely, and it is great to see it out there. And just the last event you ran there, Rally du Valais, is that image, which I know that jump really well. From other friends of mine who've done the rally as well, and it's always that jump, that transition from the small side road onto the main road. And I think I've seen an image of you guys coming over that, where you've got quite a bit of air. I don't know if you've seen that image yourself yet, but there's a great picture of you guys coming over that jump, and it is phenomenal. It's one of those ones, because it used to be an ERC round, that rally, until a few years back, and a few of my friends were doing ERC. I've seen their pictures, and then it was one of the things that flashed up. I thought, I need to talk to Alex. That's what I need to talk to Alex. So, listen, If our listeners, because we have listeners all over the world, if they want to get in touch, if they want to check in and see what you and Rihanna are doing, what's the best way of them checking out?
We have a presence on social media, on Facebook. Just, you know, you can search Oz Rally Pro, and you know, a page on Facebook will pop up with some basic details. But from there, then you can message us directly to inquire more about training, depending where you, the area that you are, and what our schedules and your and the customer schedules look like. You know, so it's pretty booked right now, but we're already looking at the end of the year and beginning of 2020. That's what is going to be the busiest for us. So Facebook Oz Rally Pro is the best way to reach us.
Fantastic. Alex, thanks so much for joining us. Folks, that has been this week's podcast. We will be back same time, same place, in the podcast hall next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.